I still see us as garden centres. And I think the day that our customers don't see us as a credible garden centre will be the day that things start to crash.
Welcome to the Underground Podcast. I'm Kate, the gardener guru, horticultural consultant and writer and presenter on all things gardening.
And I'm Phil, co-founder of Right O'Bara, a creative marketing agency for the home and garden sectors. Join us in conversation with those people shaping the UK's garden care industry.
So without further ado,
let's get down and dirty. Good to see you, Kate.
And you, Phil, how are you?
I am very good, and I am very excited about today's guest.
And why is that?
Well, today we're going to be joined by Alan Roper, the Managing Director of Blue Diamond Garden Centres. Mm-hmm. And, we had him on once before.
We did.
About a year ago.
Goodness me.
But an awful lot has happened since then.
It really has, yes. So we have quite a good, insightful chat with Alan. He tells us lots of things which are interesting, fascinating, thought-provoking. We might not necessarily agree with all his opinions, but certainly worth a listen, especially if you are new to the garden care industry, but also if you've been around a long time. He's certainly got some really interesting insights, hasn't he, Phil?
He has, and definitely some good advice, I think, for other garden centre owners, whether they're independents or chains.
Yeah.
I think it's worth just hearing what he has to say, because I think he is building a business that's going to be around for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's pretty much built a business, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, well, shall we get started?
Let's have a listen. So it's my absolute pleasure to welcome onto the podcast Alan Roper, the Managing Director of Blue Diamond. Welcome, Alan.
Hi, guys.
Hi there, Alan.
Nice to do a follow-up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to have you back on.
When was the last time we spoke? I can't remember. Time goes so quickly.
I think it was probably about last March.
Was it really?
March 24.
2024, yeah.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah, so it was quite a while ago. Yeah. And since then, you've had quite a time with Blue Diamond. You've been making some big moves, including purchasing a few of the former Dobbies centres and now Barton Grange. So what made Barton Grange for you stand out?
Probably the price tag.
That's a start.
Well, I think, and everyone in the industry knows that Barton Grange is one of the sort of iconic garden centres independents. Mm-hmm. And I guess for me, on the journey of growing the group, most of our opportunities have always been, you know, people coming to a point in their life where they want to sell their centre, or new builds that I've done, or failing centres. You know, the Wyvales are obviously a big that journey. And so I haven't really been faced with many opportunities where you have got a very successful business that actually is successful on the bottom line. So there are a lot of, you know, successful businesses out there, but there's also a lot of businesses that, you know, appear successful, but it doesn't always translate to the bottom line. Barton Grange was an exception. You know, it was for a £15.5 million guard center. It was delivering the profit that you would expect from a business of that size, and hence the multiple on the price tag. So I guess the question for me with Barton Grange was, normally we get opportunities where the opportunity cost is much lower and the upside is much greater. So therefore you're faced with the question, are you better off using that cash for cheaper opportunities that you know you could get to a level that would potentially be in par with Barton Grange, which we have in our portfolio.
Yeah.
But I guess for me, when I look at our business, we have now in our stable of garden centres, a lot of successful, iconic, independent centres. So, you know, you've got the likes of Van Hague's is a notable one. Capri Garden Centre, a lot of people will remember. Beckworth, Emporium, Tross, Percy Thrower, you know, Ensley, people remember Sanders, you know, the list goes on. Bridgemere Garden World, as it was known, Garden Centre, which we've restored to its former glory, removed the crazy golf dinosaur and the W.O. and invested in the gardens that were there, dated back to 1988. So it kind of fits in terms of joining those sort of large destination garden centres, albeit at a higher price point. And also, I think it's kind of sends a message to people that are in the industry, and we're in this sort of demographic place where a lot of people that own successful independent garden centres are of an age where they are facing retirement. And I know quite a few of these, and their children are of the digital age, and they've probably seen their parents getting stressed and arguing with each other and kind of feel it's not for them, which is the case from a number of people I've spoken to. So what do they do, you know, faced with that?
Yeah.
So I do see more opportunities on the horizon. Guy Toppin, you know, has publicly quoted that he felt that we would be the right fit for his team and that we would protect the brand of Barton Grange.
Yeah.
And we will. And we will protect the team. We will protect Barton Grange. And I think by demonstrating that again with such a large, iconic business, it kind of signals to other owners of garden centres who might be thinking of selling or leasing their centre that Blue Diamond is a safe place to entrust your legacy for us to carry on your brand and your garden centre into the future. And so I think that was a big part of why I chose to spend quite a lot of money on Barton Grange.
So when you're looking at the sites that you've acquired recently, Alan, how do they fit into your overall larger Blue Diamond story?
It's an interesting one. When I started out, people used to say to me, why are you not just putting Blue Diamond out of the door and calling it Blue Diamond Garden Centres like you call Dobie's Garden Centres, Wyvale Gardens?
Yeah.
And I said, well, if I do that, I destroy the reputation and the brand that's been built up years in that locality. And the one thing to understand about garden centres, they play a very strong role in community. One of the first deals I did was Wilton House Garden Centre, and Wilton House, Earl of Pembroke, down in Wiltshire, very famous house. I'm not going to turn it into Blue Diamond. You keep Wilton House. It's part of Wilton House. The same we own Chatsworth. It's part of Chatsworth, Grosvenor.
Right.
Yeah. Part of the Grosvenor estate. So I took a decision 25 years ago that I would go down this role and maintain. And people say, well, you'll never develop the Blue Diamond brand. But I could tell you that people do very much. I guess that's still surprising me how strong our brand has become. If we move into an area where we're buying Barton Grange, a lot of people who already visit our centres further south in Friars or Grosvenor were going into and saying to the staff, I hear, you know, Blue Diamond's buying Barton Grange. And then we're telling them based on their experience of Friars and Grosvenor, it would be a good thing for them because they see Friars. They see, I think the customer has acknowledged or understood who Blue Diamond are, that we're Blue Diamond, but we also champion these brands and protect these brands and protect the identity and the history of these centres. So I guess the answer to your question, it's part of our brand, part of our story, rather than how it fits in.
So it's like they're part of the Blue Diamond family, but each one keeps its local identity.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I think if you're going to have success as a group, I mean, groups fail because they treat people like Thunderbird puppets and they want to pull their string. And, you know, if you're going to have success and the bigger you get, you know, it's a big business. I mean, we'll hit through the 400 million turnover barrier this year. If you're going to continue to manage a business of that size, you need strength and ownership throughout the business. And that's really important within the centers themselves. They have to feel that they own that business, that they're proud to belong to that business. So you give them a sense of ownership where they have an ability to feel that they can make decisions in store to drive things. I mean, they're signed up to our retail religion and our brand, so they do it within the context of that. But they do have this ownership. They don't have people turning up in, you know, cars, getting out and doing operational floor walks, checking up on what they're doing. We don't do any of that. What we do is you have visibility through the numbers and benchmarking system that allows them to see their own opportunities and make decisions to deliver on those profit opportunities that they can see compared to their peers in the group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't need someone to go and tell them they should be doing it this way or that way and completely and utterly demoralize them. I give them the management tools to look at the figures and see the opportunities for them and act on those. Right. And that's how you get strength and that's how you get ownership. And you don't get Thunderbirds, such as our old iron.
I think that leads nicely onto my next question, actually, Alan. So I think what you were saying there is sort of fundamental to what you believe and how you think that Blue Diamond won't fall into some of the same traps that maybe Y-Vale did and Dobby's when they nearly collapsed. So, I mean, is that right? Is that what you think that's the key?
Yes, it is. Y-Vale were like a Dyson vacuum cleaner. I always remember they went around hoovering up garden centers. Didn't matter what size, what location. They just bought them. And that started long before the private equity boys. The problem had started many, many years before that. People don't really see that when they subscribe Y-Vale. They say, well, it was the private equity that cocked it up. Well, they did, but the problems were so acute within it because of, you know, people have got these egos about the number of centers that you have, you know? Right. Mm-hmm. And quite often, you know, the trade media report on the number of centers. It's not about the number of centers. It's about the quality of what you have, and it's about your overall turnover.
Yeah.
You know, once you get in the numbers game, oh, I've got to have X amount, I'm up to 70 or 80 or 90, you lose focus. And I don't think you really understand what it is that your ambition or your goal is. And that always ends in failure. And for me, it's always been about the quality of the opportunity and growing at a sustainable rate. So it's a combination of making sure you're buying the right business to focus on your target consumer. And it's the same as supermarkets. Your target consumer is not anyone that's got a garden. It doesn't work like that. You have to identify through socioeconomic principles, define whether you're a value-driven retailer or you're an aspirational retailer. Is it value or volume or is it aspiration? And there are some, you know, there are some good operators in retail generally, also within the garden center sector, you know, that offer real value and do significant volumes. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's not how I want to retail. I prefer to retail to a more aspirational customer base. And defining your customer and growing sustainably, not getting egocentric about the number of centers is key.
Yeah. So this numbers game that you're just referring to there, Alan, would you say that's a stark warning for some of the other chain owners?
I would, without mentioning any names.
No.
Oh, you can mention names. So let's just move on a bit, Alan. So you've always said gardening is the heart of Blue Diamond. And with each destination, got food halls, fashion, restaurants all growing fast. Do you still see Blue Diamond first and foremost as a garden centre business, or is it now much broader than that now?
I suppose by definition of what you've said about the categories we do and fashion, it's much broader. But then nearly every independent, a garden centre is the same. The only difference is they tend to have clothing concessions, whereas our clothing is a proper design team who design all of their own clothing, do their own bits, and go to the factories in Turkey, in Italy, in India, China, and produce. And so we have the Cerulean brand, and it's all our own brand. Mm-hmm. You can't buy it anywhere else. And it's not someone else's product with our label in that is exclusive. They've actually created it all themselves. Right. So there's a big difference in that we approach things. But to get back to your question, I still see us as garden centres. And I think the day that our customers don't see us as a credible garden centre will be the day that things start to crash. But as always, you know, it's long ago proven that you can't retail on just the gardening cycle. And obviously Christmas was a bit part of that going back to the 80s that helped stabilize the year. And then other profit centers have got bolted on. But unlike, you know, the Y of Our Boys that brought in, you know, Crazy Dinosaurs and W.H. Smith and Costa Coffee and, you know, and just concessions for the sake of it, we don't have other people's businesses under our roof. There are a few exceptions where we have a multi-retail park where we'll have them in separate units, but not under the same garden center roof. So, you know, which means that we can create a more cohesive and less jarring retail experience in terms of the tone and the flow. You know, gardening's still growing, but government policies and costs are increasing all the time. And we're going through a big phase at the moment where costs are increasing. And I wrote in my recent report and accounts for our financial year last year, which people can find on our website under Investor Relations, called The Missing Millions, which illustrates the extent to which government policy has damaged the bottom line for a lot of businesses in this country. And we're no exception. It removed 12.6 million, I think the number was, from our bottom line, which is through wage inflation triggered by two successive minimum wage increases and a further one this year, along with a increase in national insurance. And it's not just the minimum wage. You know, if you're a good employer, you maintain the hourly rate gap between minimum wage. So if someone was on £1 more than the minimum wage, we've maintained that. But when the second round came in, that started putting pressure between people that were just doing an hourly rate and a supervisor. And then the supervisor puts pressure. So you've got this huge wage inflation, and that's been the cost to us. Now, I'm not against a decent minimum wage. All I'm saying, it has a consequence on bottom line, and you've got to push back and try and mitigate that and protect your bottom line. Otherwise, you can't continue to invest in the business. So therefore, I guess if I'm trying to link back to where your question started, these other profit centers I talk about, whether it's fashion or home, are important. Without them, most garden centre businesses would struggle.
So, Alan, I know that you're going to be speaking at GLEE this year, but your main stage presentation is going to be a little bit different, I gather. You're going to be answering questions from anyone in the industry. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I prefer questions to kind of, you know, I got up and did a thing at GEMA about how I operate the business, which is all fine. But I do feel that a little bit more frank, transparent honesty and debate about this industry would be more helpful to people. I remember myself starting out 35 years ago and my keenness to understand more about the industry and understand how business works, pressures, and keen to soak up experiences from people that were further down the business road than I was. So I guess my agreement to do these things is for people to ask me questions, what they want to know, so they can, I can help them. I was in that space years ago. And I think there could be too many kind of platitudes and everyone saying everything's great and everything's lovely. And that doesn't get anybody anywhere. What gets people somewhere is getting into the detail, some honest, strong questions and some truthful answers. And hopefully people that listening to that question and answer session, we'll learn some, be they a supplier or a garden centre retailer.
Fantastic. We'll share the link so that people can submit their questions. We'll share that in our show notes.
So apart from this, the Q&A, what keeps you coming back to Glee? Why do you feel you need to be there, Alan? You know, is there anything you're looking forward to about going there 2025?
I go there in the hope that we can find new suppliers. The existing suppliers there, it's not really important that we see them because we can see them at any time. It might be a front for independents that don't have the time or the access that we get as a group.
Yep.
I get that. But for me, I hope I'm going to find new suppliers, which is why I've long held the view that the European model for trade shows is better than the English model. Because if you listen to what suppliers will always tell you and the likes of Smart Solar, successful company, we felt, you know, why do we need to keep paying these heavy fees to Glee when we can grow our business without them? And the fees are there because entry is free, whereas I think, you know, I can't think what Smoger's up to now, but it's probably £25-30, something like that. And I don't think £25-30 is much to ask of someone if it means that when I walk into the show, I can see smaller, more niche suppliers, startup businesses looking to get into the industry that gives me more choice to pick up new products. I'd happily pay £300 entrance fee for that, you know, if it enriched my choice. But what I do here is you know, suppliers saying, well, it's a bit pricey. So Glee tend to broaden the church of products. When you go in there, I think I've seen pets and a lot more Chinese people sitting in booths. What I want to see is more depth within the category. And to get more depth in a category, you need to encourage more suppliers. And those suppliers are not going to be the dominant garden center suppliers. They're going to be smaller suppliers. That's why, to answer your question, I'm looking for new product, new suppliers, because that is what moves the needle. That moves the growth needle. But I do think there is an unacknowledged barrier to more suppliers engaging in Glee to give us the choice. So there you go.
Okay, so last time we spoke, Alan, you mentioned investing in your own nurseries to secure supply. How is that going?
Good and bad.
Right. Do you want to expand?
So on the Cecil nurseries, which used to call Meredith's, it's been very good because it was a well-run business before we bought it. And the team there are excellent. And the quality is very, very good. I mean, all of our garden center teams acknowledge the quality, which was the main reason for buying that nursery. Because had we not bought them, and we were 60% of their business, we would have had to, and they were bought by another operator, we would have had to gone elsewhere. And quality is important to us. And so some of the even bigger producers that might be producing for the sheds, the quality is not where we need it to be. So that's why we bought. So that's been successful, and it enabled us to shape our offer with greater degree of flexibility. On the Ardy side, when I picked up Bridgemere Nurseries, that's been more of a painful journey. So, yeah, millions of pounds of notes on the bonfire. So it's been a very expensive journey, and we've made management changes, and we're going to make further changes. So we're getting on top of it, and we're going to push through it, and we're going to kind of look at what we're growing. But it just shows you, running a successful nursery is not easy, but we're not going to give up, even though it has been an expensive journey. I think once we get into next year, we'll hopefully see the sun come up on the Hardy. But the seasonal's been very successful. The Hardy, it's been painful, but we'll get through it.
A slightly left field question for you, Alan. Little Dobby's, which was a concept store for on the high street, didn't really take off. Do you think there's a future for urban garden stores in the UK? And is that something that you think Blue Diamond would ever look at?
Well, I'll answer the last question first. No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I guess when I heard about it, like little dobies, and then I went to visit one. I went into the Cheltenham store.
Okay, yeah.
And when I dovetail that with the fact that I remember, I think it was about 2013, I was building Redfields, bear with me, and were kind of disappearing. The trend was not where it is now. And I remember making the decision, well, I'm not going to give up on this. So we're committing to a large houseplant area, even though the sales didn't justify it.
Right.
So had Dobie's gone into the high street then, I would have said it was absolute madness. But what happened next was, out of the blue, houseplant suddenly exploded. It all came back. You know, the Swiss cheese plant I had as a student in my Herschel college room came back and became the best-selling thing from the, you know, the 70s. So when that trend came and Adobe's were doing houseplants and I went into, I kind of got it because of all of the residential people and particularly places like Cheltenham where it's quite wealthy and there's a lot of rent, and I got it. And I think there is, providing the trend for houseplant stays, I think there's something in it. Bearing in mind that high street rents are somewhat different and you've got to get the profit per square meter. So I'd always be very intrigued to dabble and try it, see whether you could make the economies work. But on paper, got it. You're living in, you know, quite an AB1 town. This is the kind of towns you've got. All these great apartments, and you want to have, you know, green up your living space, and you've probably got balconies, and I totally got it. I just thought the execution of it was flawed, and if truth be told, I'll tell you why they did it. It was like everything else they did, including the Waitrose. It was building a message to float on the stock market. That's all it was about. It was never about, okay, let's see how we can make this profitable and work. It was all the timing. Yeah, we're going to. So they'll see that we've got all these little Dobies. It's a bit like little Waitrose and the little Tescos and little, you know, these people have come in and that's all they'll see. And they'll just see a wonderful growth opportunity and think, wow, that's what it was all about. I don't think when you look at the execution and you talk to those involved at the time, which I did, that it was ever really a serious play.
That's a shame.
I mean, put it this way, if they had to be in place and manage that for the next 10 years to make it work, I don't think they would have started it.
So talking about houseplants, Alan, you know, younger generation are still madly into houseplants. Do you see that being reflected within your garden centres? Are younger people coming in? Are you grabbing them with the houseplants and then kind of encouraging them to buy more? And if not, what can we do to get more young people through the door?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I've got, the funny thing is when I go around our centres and I look at the people running the houseplant areas, I've noticed even within our employees that there's a tendency with the younger generation to be running them. And they're very passionate about it. And, you know, we've got one chap, he's my, I call him my love child because he's got the same surname. And I don't normally come across another roper, and he's, you know, he's in his early mid-20s, so he could be, but he's not. But it's a running joke that we have. Anyway, he's very passionate, and he posts stuff on social media. And there's another chap in Mere Park. So you're right to pick up on this, because it's something that when I get a moment that we need to do more in terms of content messaging on social media to do with houseplants. I think we're all behind on that. But it's something that's on my mental job list too, because I've got passionate people already in the garden centres that could definitely, if we work with them, could reach out to young people. There's definitely something there.
So I'm going to, well, we can't have you on the podcast without talking about peat free. I'm afraid it's still a big topic. No bans come into place. And last year's weather was terrible for a lot of peat free compost production. Has that changed how Blue Diamond's approaching the switch to peat free? What are your customers telling you?
Well, there's a product on the market called Jack's Magic, which is Westland. And that still has a high level of peat. And I would say that for most people, it'd be the best-selling compost.
Right. Okay.
And the reason for that is that as we make our journey into peak three, so I'm pretty sure in saying that we are ourselves of growing meter overall, despite the Jack's magic, is getting close to 90%. Okay.
Right.
Because, yep, you know, we don't have a peat in our own brand. We do Jack's magic because the customer wants it. But outside of that, we're broadly peat free. So we've made that journey. But our peat free journey has not been easy in the same way it hasn't been easy for the customer, because the quality of what's been produced hasn't been there. And as nurseries have realized, and as our plant managers and our plant teams in the garden centers who are now having to manage peat-free plants in the plant area that dry out quicker than you can, you know, dry your hair, it's a real challenge. And so we're kind of start putting capillary matting on all our benches in the plant areas to kind of keep the compost. And there's still work being done by the manufacturers. They're all still trying to get to be the one that kind of has the best peat-free, but it's been very stop-start, very difficult, very challenging. But the momentum's still there, and it will happen. You don't need a ban to make it happen. It's going to happen.
You think so?
Either ban not coming in place, it hasn't slowed our progress, and I don't think it slowed the progress of a lot of retailers, because suppliers are very keen on the market of peat-free. But it allows, the ban has allowed, or not having the ban has allowed people time to produce a better product. Does that, hopefully that answered your question?
Yeah, no, it has. Are you on the lookout for new suppliers? Will you be seeing if there's anybody new at Glee this year that is kind of maybe got the formula right?
Oh, yeah, I would always, yeah, absolutely. I would review compost production every year, because if somebody makes the right breakthrough, you know, there was one, supplier came in early and we tried it, and it was, what was it? Anaerobic digest.
Digest it.
Yeah. And it was like Sonia sees an acid. Just burnt them off.
Right.
So we've stopped dealing with that particular supplier a long time ago. They're still there. You know, people are just trying to grab the market without any real thought to what it is that they were producing and the consequences it would have. And so I rapidly moved away from that supplier. That they acknowledged they made a massive mistake, and they've fixed it now, but I won't get back to them. But that's just one example of the difficult journey that we've been on with it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Alan, building loyal returning customers is obviously crucial for the business. And you run the Diamond Club loyalty scheme, which is right important for Blue Diamond. Do the insights you get from that scheme directly shape your strategy?
Yes. Yes, it does. It's been rather rudimentary up until now. We have moved our loyalty system to a different provider, which gives us a greater ability. We kind of know that 62/3 of our customers are AB1 and the remaining third are C1 from an economic point of view. But what we don't fully understand, although we know how many millions we do in plants and how many millions we do in gardening and fashion and home, we don't yet understand who that person is in terms of their priority when they come into store.
Right.
So the first thing I've said to Danielle, who's my customer loyalty lady, is that we need to start with how many people come into the garden center and their biggest money that they spend on is fashion. How many come in its home? How many come in its gardening? And then you can start to profile, and then you can understand what age are they buying it on. You know, home is their priority, or clothing is their priority. And then beyond that, what are the other things? So after, if it's fashion, what's next? What else do they buy? If it's plants, what do they buy? What are they not buying? Why are they not buying it? Look at their age. Look at their socioeconomic group. So once we build that profile up and we understand our customer more, we can start to change their behavior. And that behavior will be engagement, hopefully, into other categories in the store that they may not be paying attention to and your aim with customer loyalty beyond changing their spending pattern to increase the basket spend in store is to increase the regularity of their visit, if possible. So it's going to be a big part of what we do going into 2026.
Fantastic. Okay. That's really interesting. So if we're going to start winding things up a little bit here, Alan, but if you could give one piece of advice to another garden centre owner listening right now, what would it be?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's focus, you know, just understand your customer and what they want, measuring their feedback and understanding and building your relationship with them. And I guess you can't run a successful business without harvesting the data that an EPOS system provides in order for you to understand where your profitability and maximize your profitability in a business. And I think as much as you can, kind of benchmarking against other businesses, you know, what are their staff costs? What are their margins? You know, what are their overhead percentages? You know, all of these as a percentage of turnover for your band and turnover, identifying opportunity and efficiency, which you won't be aware of, but knowing that, gosh, they've got this margin and their staff costs are X and their overheads are Y, and, you know, the customers are happy. And it's a good offer, but yet they're able to deliver within these parameters. You kind of don't know it's there until someone shows you it's there. So try as much as you can to benchmark your own performance against those of others, because it gives you a compass bearing on where profitability lies as you focus on your customer.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Well, finally, Alan, looking into your crystal ball of the future, what do you see as the biggest threat and the biggest opportunity facing the garden centre industry to come?
I don't see any threats. You know, threats to the industry is some of the owners that have come in with some of the tweaks and kind of damaged the experience in the eyes of the customer. You know, YVAL was a good example of that. Because that doesn't help anybody. But, you know, when they do, it becomes my opportunity. So so that's good. But, you know, I don't see, if I look ahead, certainly 10 years, I don't see the public falling out of love with garden centres. I think we're very much at the heart of them, providing, going back to your earlier question, that we maintain plants and gardening at the heart of what we do. And we work with the community and we have relationships with the community. We're not just a retail business that you visit. I mean, we support a lot of local charities and, you know, in the community. Yeah. The biggest threat is the threat that all retail faces, the continual increases in cost pressures, the absolutely left loony policy about to be unleashed on us, which is ridiculous, that employees within one day have the rights that they're, you know, it's crazy. You're acting on the basis that all people are good people and they won't join a business and try and leverage a payout out of you, which we get. It's absolute lunacy, and it will damage employers' ability to be flexible. It would damage their desire to, you know, they'll be very, very careful about who they employ. So some people won't get the opportunity if they think for a second they're not going to be any good, because quite often employees join and they go on a journey with you and you develop them. Well, any sense that you're going to develop anybody, you're not going to take a chance anymore. So these employment are just a huge barrier to businesses. There's a discussion by labor about rates now could go up. Independence garden centers up until this April were only paying 40% of their rates bill, which was an overhang of the pandemic. And I never understood why that relief was in place for so long when people didn't need it. But suddenly those independents have got to pay 70%, then 100%, and who knows, then it'll be even higher.
Yeah.
So government is the biggest threat to business right now.
Yeah. Okay.
And to garden centres. Right. Essentially, the biggest threat is the what we're going through with this government's faced with trying to reduce the burden of debt that's been built up in every country in the last 20 years. And unfortunately, the way they're doing it is not the right way because it limits growth.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry about the preaching.
No. We like a rant.
On a slightly lighter note, am I right in thinking, Alan, that at the Green Fingers Floral Ball, you bid and won your height in books?
I did, and I'm sending all the books to children hospitals.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, so that we're going to be giving the books to the children hospitals, so there's a double benefit there.
Fantastic.
And I also bought Dry Toppings barge trip for a week. I haven't been on a barge for 40 years. I've always wanted to go back. It's one of the most wonderful experiences, that sort of gentle
slowing down.
And so I'm looking forward to doing that at some point.
Was that a clincher in the Barton Grange deal?
No, the deal was done.
Right. Well, Alan, listen, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Lots of food for thought.
And sort of advice for other garden centre owners, I think, in there.
Thank you, guys.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the Underground, or sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant, and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, the founding partner of Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at wrightobarra.com.